en medios internacionales rebotan noticias e informaciones donde este señor ha estado involucrado en situaciones que definitivamente lo señalan como parte de esta actividad delictiva, pues.
Para Hispan TV, John Alonso, desde la ciudad de Panamá.
A continuación escucharemos el reporte de Yosvani Noguet sobre la política exterior de Irán.
Irán busca activar una diplomacia económica y una política exterior equilibrada para profundizar sus lazos tanto con países vecinos y asiáticos como con otras regiones del mundo, entre ellas África, América Latina y Europa. Así lo remarcó el presidente del país, Seyed Ebrahim Raisi, en una reunión con un grupo de embajadores extranjeros en Teherán con motivo del 43º aniversario de la Revolución Islámica.
La República Islámica de Irán siempre ha insistido en su política fundamental de buena vecindad, crear confianza y el diálogo con países vecinos. Y considera que el logro de una seguridad duradera y una región más tranquila y desarrollada no será posible sino por vía de cooperaciones pacíficas. De hecho, nuestro enfoque en las relaciones con los países del mundo, especialmente con nuestros vecinos, no es un asunto táctico, sino estratégico.
Raisi reiteró el compromiso de Irán con los diálogos en Viena con el grupo 4+1. Denunció que la crítica situación en la que se encuentra el acuerdo nuclear de 2015 es resultado de actos violatorios de Estados Unidos y la inacción de Europa al respecto. A su vez, el canciller de Irán, Hussein Amir Abdullahian, aseveró que en Viena, Washington y los firmantes europeos del tratado nuclear están enfrentados a un histórico examen ante los ojos de la comunidad internacional.
Actualmente en Viena, Estados Unidos y las partes occidentales están enfrentados a un gran examen y deberían mostrar frente a la comunidad internacional su comportamiento real. Estamos presentes en la mesa de diálogo con seriedad, con planes e innovaciones. Estamos decididos a alcanzar un buen acuerdo. Lo que determinaría el final de esas negociaciones sería la voluntad de las partes occidentales en volver al pleno cumplimiento de obligaciones y la eliminación de todas las sanciones antiiraníes.
La octava ronda de diálogos en Viena fue retomada el martes tras una pausa de 11 días durante la cual los equipos negociadores consultaron con sus respectivas capitales sobre el estado actual del proceso. Irán insiste en la necesidad de eliminar todas las sanciones en su contra de manera efectiva y verificable. Pide además garantías de que Estados Unidos no repita sus actos violatorios unilaterales. Yosvani Noguet con información de Minujo Seinsadeh, Hispan TV Noticias.
En otras noticias, las críticas de Washington a la selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Next up on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides. And unfortunately, it's only going to be on the stream, I suspect, today because we're having problems with our server. We can stream it, but we can't archive it. And we haven't been able to archive shows from either the previous Sunday or the previous Thursday. So, damn. But we're going to try and fix that, or I'm going to be hoping that somebody is. And if not, we'll have to, shoot the techies or look for other techies or something. So stay with us. We're also going to be going through a flashback, which is back in 1994, right before Free Radio actually began broadcasting, a year before, where you get to hear me and then, I guess he was council member at that time, Mike Rotkin, debating the proposed city anti-panhandling, anti-sitting, anti-homeless ordinances that were being shoveled through city council, sort of similar to 2022 in its own way, although it was an expansion around the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban didn't really, I think they made it slightly worse back in 1994, but the real issue was to get rid of homeless people visibly downtown. Eliminate visible poverty. It provoked all kinds of protests when they went after Food Not Bombs, which then served in front of what is now Five Guys Restaurant and was then a parking lot after the Ford's department store had been leveled by the earthquake, or damaged and then leveled. So also we're going to look at the OVO victory, and that's surprising, interesting, and unexpected. Special tip of the hat to the ACLU and the Disability Coalition attorneys who kicked the ass of our local Coastal Commission flunkies who were all set to just lick the butt of the City Council's reactionary majority and pass this on to the Coastal Commission with a recommendation that it be rubber stamped by being declared no substantial issues. They can just be done without a really much discussion or debate. They tried that before in 2016 and failed, but they're they don't care. They're unflaggable. They do it again and again and again. We have to rise to stop them. And I'll be talking more about that a little bit. But again, I don't even know if this is going to go out much because it's going to be a while before we get archived. By that time, all you loyal listeners may be off loyally listening to something else. So we'll see what we can do.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. and ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, yesterday I received a pleasant surprise in correspondence from Reggie Meisler, who is one of the principal appellants, that is to say, someone who appealed the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, or it's more the Outsiders Vamoose Ordinance, the OVO, that's another way of looking at it. It goes after 22-foot folks, vehicles, folks who are parked 20, people whose vehicles are 22 feet long or longer, or parked between midnight and 5 in the coastal zone, which is a large swath of land covering, I don't know if it's half the city, but it's certainly a major chunk of it. And so getting the Coastal Commission to say you can't do this here without further careful documentation and assessment, which the city had refused to do 6 years ago when it presented a similar ordinance to the Coastal Commission, almost an identical one, in fact, means that they can't enforce any of it in the city except through their nasty permit parking program, which they've been doing for years. But that tends to require going neighborhood by neighborhood, and impatient reactionaries like Cynthia Matthews and Donna Myers just don't want to do that. So they prefer to have the entire thing, have the entire OVOs dumped in a single swoop, which a number of communities have done, they've done it because they haven't been challenged, this is my impression, to the Coastal Commission. That is something that I can perhaps document and take up and get more information on and pass on to you at a later time, although it may not be necessary, because if for a couple of reasons. Even if we win this fight, and it looks like now we might, the odds have significantly improved to win this fight. I always thought the odds were pretty good, because the Coastal Commission last time overruled its own staff, which is usually high up the ass of the city council's staff here in Santa Cruz, and working with them diligently to find ways to give them what they want, which in this case is to criminalize poor and homeless people in vehicles, or let's put it this way, to run those darn vehicles off the street because some folks are nervous about the people who live in them, and they're unsightly, and they have problems. We aren't going to try to, of course, find ways to mitigate the situation by providing facilities of some kind for people who live in their vehicles, because they have no housing, and the city council hasn't provided any of that or made it available to workers, for that matter, but simply rushed on to increase their tax base with essentially luxury housing downtown and elsewhere, and then some minor subsidized housing compared to the numbers of other developments. I'd like to see someone do an analysis of that, because it's been my impression, perhaps simply my prejudice, that the subsidized housing is far less than the housing that is provided for those who are well-to-do and can kick in lots of bucks, if they do. I don't know actually what vacancy rates there are, how much of it is simply real estate speculation. It's a good question. So one of the problems I have doing this show on Thursday morning, which is when I'm doing it, is I'm also rushing to get the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom agenda, out and make sure that we've got stuff to actually address and maybe act on. That would be novel and a good idea. Actually, sometimes we do, but rarely these days. And that kind of takes up my time, puts me under pressure, and makes me rattle on in ways perhaps that I shouldn't, because you folks listening may not be as well acquainted with these issues as some of us who like to dip our wick in them a lot, or seem to find ourselves doing that. That's what I do anyway. Anyway, what I'm saying is it was a pleasant Wednesday for me yesterday because, at least in some respects, I got the word from Reggie Meisler, who had just been sent the staff's amended report. Apparently, the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition, which also filed an appeal against the OVO law, saying it discriminated against folks in their vehicles, because it may not matter that much to the Coastal Commission, though it seemed to a bit in the last time we went to appeal this similar ordinance in 2016. It may not matter a lot that homeless people are being displaced from their homes, that they're criminalized everywhere in town as far as sleeping goes, that the city is continuing its usual practice of enforcing away visible homeless instead of providing true pathways to housing, or even, or at least, pathways to survival in the meantime, or pathways to constitutional protection in the meantime. So the significant thing I heard from Reggie was that because of this ACLU letter, which was sent about a week ago to the Coastal Commission denouncing their finding that the OVO is perfectly fine, that no substantial issue was raised, and that the full Coastal Commission could simply roll right ahead and rubber stamp it without further ado, was a section of the ordinance that had not been focused on either by me in 2016, since it was largely the same ordinance, or by Santa Cruz Cares, or by me in my netcasts here, in talking about the ordinance and discussing it with various people, which is, you're going to hear about this because I'm going to read to you next the staff report's decision. But in a few words, there's not simply a ban on oversized vehicles 22 feet or longer, not being able to park anywhere after midnight, from midnight to 5, but it also is a 24-hour law that bans them from 54% or something of the parking area in the city throughout the day, 365 days a year, if they are within 100 feet of intersections, traffic lights, stop signs, things of that sort, which puts a large section of the city off, are out of their purview, out of their ability to park there. And that certainly denies a lot of public access, not just to homeless people, but to anybody in an oversized vehicle. And that's the issue that we had found in the past that persuaded the Coastal Commission, which I brought to the Coastal Commission years ago, was, well, they don't have storage facilities for people to go and park legally, and so you are in fact denying people coastal access by saying you're going to give them tickets and fines if they park at night or say overnight somewhere on a public land as they go through, because you aren't providing any alternatives. The city insisted, oh, there are churches that people can go to, but they didn't have any details and anything specific, and so in this new ordinance they cooked up this phony safe parking program. I say phony because it's token, because it has high barriers, and because it is clearly designed to facilitate enforcement. It has nothing to do with real assistance for people in vehicles or real attempts to deal with the homeless situation or to deal with any problems that may come from people who aren't homeless but who are passing through, a waste disposal, things of that sort. Because they haven't set up facilities to do that, and they still haven't done that. They're posing it as a promise, as it's something they will do. I think they have two parking lots they've set up for what's called Tier 2 activity, which is an overnight parking, but has a whole elaborate set of rules, which people passing through are not going to sign on to, likely. And where are they going to find these places? I think there are only 6 spots at the moment. There's one spot in the police department that has not been used much at all, because homeless folks, who this is supposedly a great charity for, are not interested in dealing with the police department, particularly many of them, because the police department has traditionally been the folks that round them up, and they may have outstanding warrants, et cetera, et cetera. And we're talking about crap warrants, you know, for probation violations that have nothing to do with real crimes, or for homeless infractions, such as sitting too near a building, not vending properly when you're displaying stuff you want to pass on for donation downtown or on the wharf. Although that has not been a real problem lately, although people have been tricked or coerced into paying big fees for vending licenses, and I will hopefully be talking about that in a future conversation on one of these netcasts. And the second reason that in 2016 the Coastal Commission turned down the city's quick rubber stamp this, and the local coastal commission staff saying quick rubber stamp this, was because it is clearly an anti-homeless law that suggests that homeless people are criminals, and it doesn't provide the documentation to show this, the evidence. It isn't there. And the same thing is still true in 2022. There are obviously some criminal activity going on among the homeless, stealing bread and that sort of thing. But the current laws can address that issue. You don't have to criminalize everybody to deal with it. It's sort of like treating all black people as criminals because you find that police are having fun arresting a lot of black people and shooting a number of them, too. So, anyway, the ACLU letter and the disability rights letter to the Coastal Commission's local lapdog people, that lapdog to the city council, not to the Coastal Commission's mandate, which is to protect and provide public access to the coast for everybody, not just the wealthy. They found that this 100-foot, 24-hour-a-day, 365-day-a-year ban for many locations in the city was simply too much. And it weighed against it, and it was a significant issue and had to be really more fully decided by the Coastal Commission. And once that is accepted, if that interpretation, that staff interpretation, is accepted by the Coastal Commission, you never can tell what they're going to do, and they will be meeting, will have met today, actually, by the time I've given this, if you're able to hear this at 6 o'clock on Thursday the 14th, the issue will have been decided, whether it's a significant issue, which means that they're going to hold off on the OVO and say, whoa, Nelly, or whether they're going to allow it to be rubber stamped. That'll have already been decided. Probably read about it in tomorrow's Urinal, which is to say the Santa Cruz Sentinel, for those who like fancy names for crappy papers. So let's hear what the staff report says after the ACLU's 9-page letter reached them. I'm not going to read it. I think I may post it on Santa Cruz Indie Media in the days to come. And who knows, maybe we can post some of the Coastal Commission discussion if any of it happens. It likely will just be a quick vote, but who knows. I'm not sufficiently conversant with them and haven't followed enough of their procedures to give you any really good predictions. But here's what they wrote. And this is the addendum to the California Coastal Commission's item 14A, which is the appeal of the OVO ordinance that it's considering today, or it has already considered today by this time. I'm just going to read a few selections from it because it's 2.5 pages long, and I don't have a lot of time. This recent revised staff recommendation is necessary because in the time since the staff report was distributed, that's where they said, oh, there's no problem, ratify the OVO, everything's great, staff received important new information from both the appellants and from the city of Santa Cruz as regards the full extent of the city-approved project. And supposedly you can see the correspondence package for the new information they got. It doesn't look to me like they got much new information. It looks like both they and the Santa Cruz CARES and I, both in 2016 and in my letter opposing this to the various bodies of Santa Cruz City Council, the zoning administrator, the appeal to the zoning administrator, didn't really focus on, which is the 100-foot setbacks that are required and essentially make no parking zones throughout the city 24 hours a day, which is a significant reduction of public access. And I apologize for not seeing this, but I didn't see it, and neither did a lot of people in the Santa Cruz CARES. Or if they did, I didn't notice it in much of their appeal discussion. Specifically, in addition to the midnight to 5 a.m. oversized vehicle parking prohibition that staff evaluated in the original staff report, staff learned that the city-approved project also includes restrictions against parking oversized vehicles at any time, 24 hours a day and 365 days per year, within 100 feet of any crosswalk, intersection, stop sign, official electric flashing device, or approach to any traffic signal. The city estimates that such a restriction would entirely eliminate some 54% of oversized vehicle parking areas in the coastal zone, and this number may actually be higher. The city asserts that the 100-foot no-parking buffer is important for public safety reasons because pedestrians, bicyclists, and other vehicles cannot see through oversized vehicles, and this could lead to collisions and other safety problems at intersections. However, the city already implements a parking prohibition for all vehicles within 20 feet of intersections, albeit not through the LCP, which is the local coastal zone, for similar public safety purposes. And while it might be true that oversized vehicles may pose additional line-of-sight issues, no clear evidence, this is often the issue that I have with the city council's anti-homeless stuff, has been presented as to why an additional 80 feet or a total of 100 feet or a five times larger buffer of no parking area is needed and or appropriate, especially as it applies to all of the specific buffer cases identified, i.e. within 100 feet of not only intersections, but also crosswalks, stop signs, official electric flashing devices, and approaches to traffic signals. Thus, the degree of public safety problem is not clearly defined and not clearly tied back to evidence suggesting that such a 100-foot prohibition is indeed warranted for public safety purposes. In any case, the 100-foot oversized vehicle parking restriction that would apply 24 hours per day and 365 days per year would restrict such parking in a large swath of the city's coastal zone at all times, daytime and nighttime, eliminating parking options for oversized vehicles on 28 miles at least of city coastal zone streets, a 54% loss of such parking areas. Thus, while the staff's original analysis was that the city's action would have a limited impact on public access based on an understanding that it was limited to a midnight to 5 a.m. nighttime period, in addition, the city-approved project would have quite a large impact on public access users using oversized vehicles at all times, including reducing their ability to access and enjoy the coastal zone during daytime as well. So I could read more, and I suggest I probably will maybe put up this report, and you can certainly find it online. But the point, actually, that's really, there are two points, or more, actually, but let me start with these, and maybe finish with these because of time problems. First of all, this 24-hour, 100-foot setback is something that the Coastal Commission, with its many hard workers and its fancy reports and its footnoted long recommendations to the Coastal Commission that originally said on two different occasions, 2016 and again this month in 2022, actually I think it was last month, it's fine, there's no problems with this, there's no limiting on public access. They didn't even mention this 100-foot deal. And it shows you how subservient they are, but not just that, how we overlook sometimes the obvious because we're focused on the outrageous, which is the banning at night of homeless folks, because that's so clearly what this is really about. It's important that we understand the whole picture, and it's amazing that this group of individuals paid with your taxpayer dollars didn't grasp this fact, probably because they work so closely with the city staff and who are so eager to turn out a product that's okay with the city council and the city staff. City council is often in the hands of the city staff. I don't know if that was the case this time. There were some who said that the original OVO ordinance by Rochelle Naroyan, a councilwoman back then, was something the city staff didn't like, but they went along with. But if they didn't like it, they should have said so, and they didn't. And instead, they backed it up, and they embarrassed themselves in front of the Coastal Commission when our side won, because of the obvious lack of storage facilities and the obvious lack of evidence that homeless people in their vehicles are a criminal danger in Santa Cruz. The second point is it's not going to be in any way a real assurance, golden key, sacred decision that we're finding here, because it's the police who run around enforcing this stuff along with Deborah Elston and her volunteers. Well, they're in the police department. And they haven't stopped. Even when the Coastal Commission overturned the last OVO and sent it back, the police just kept on their merry way going after vehicles in the coastal zone. They used other laws, 72-hour law, and they also posted signs that were clearly in violation of the Coastal Commission's statement. You have to get a permit from the local coastal board before you do that. And the coastal board, through Ryan Maroney, told me that they'd never given such permits, but that they were going to certainly have a nice, harsh talking to those city officials who were doing that. But, of course, whatever the outcome of that so-called harsh talking, if it ever happened, it had no consequences, and people were still being ticketed. No parking signs were being put up in coastal zones where they shouldn't have been, and that's been going on even in the midst of the COVID scene, although I think probably less so. So that's kind of my update, and I hope it hasn't put everybody to sleep, but that's some of the story. Now we're going to turn to a flashback from, I guess it's February of 1994, where KSCO, the notorious reactionary AM radio station run by my old buddy Mike Zwirling, has me on, actually, because I was considered a bad boy in those days, versus a council member and previously mayor Mike Rotkin debating ordinances cooked up by Ryan Coonerty, make that Neil Coonerty, his father, who was mayor the previous year in 1993, and then became supervisor years later. In any case, a whole series of ordinances that really went after activists who were demanding the city stop enforcing the sleeping ban, because at that time, we had what was the Tobe decision. It was handed down in Southern California, which stated that it violated the sleeping ban, the law against camping anywhere and everywhere or anywhere at all. That is, you can't. There were no legal places for people to sleep at night, and that impacted, I think, between 1,000 and 2,000 people in Santa Cruz, though the counting was a little unclear. So a lot of the subject is self-explanatory. There will be no musical breaks, however, except for KSCO's. I think I was able to cut out the commercial breaks. I hope I was. I'm pretty sure I did when I recorded this, 25 to 30 years ago? Gosh, it's almost 30 years ago. And I was 94. Yeah, it's almost 30 years ago. And check it out. You get to. It's the same myths have to be challenged. The same phony narrative has to be exposed and corrected. We got the same jobs in front of us, and it's just. It's gotten worse, although some token starts have been made, mostly because of the COVID situation. However, we got a long. It's not just a long, long way to go. It's that things are getting worse, in my view, and they at the political level, it doesn't seem like there is much opportunity for rational dialogue, as there really never has been. It really stems from direct action. That's true for whether it's true for ending the war in Ukraine or ending the nuclear arming of the nations and the suicide pact that we all seem tied to with Biden and Putin. It's up to us, folks. Sorry, you got to get up. You got to get out on the streets and stay out on the streets. Do as I do, not as I do as I say, not as I do, because I'm not out on the streets. But that's what needs to be done. So call me out. Make me come out. I'll try and join you.
The homeless in downtown Santa Cruz are at it again. Should panhandling permits be issued? And should it be illegal to serve food to the homeless? Join AM 1080 KSCO this Saturday from 10 till noon with host Michael Zwirling and interesting, informed, and provocative guests as they discuss this issue on the Saturday special. Saturday morning at 10 on AM 1080 KSCO.
Interesting, informed, and provocative guests are.
I'm Mike Rock.
No, wait a minute. Well, your mic isn't up yet, Mike. Stand by. Yeah, I think you just
Mike
gave it away.
Mike is not.
No, now they're both on. They're all on.
Get right again then. I'm
now,
Mike
what?
For the Santa Cruz
all right.
Council.
And I'm Robert Norris, wandering activist.
Robert, you haven't been on the station here for a while, except on the telephone here. We've done a number of Saturday specials with you, and boy, you've got a lot of clout with Rosemary to get one of these programs scheduled now that we're such a hot and popular radio station with what was it, 4 days' notice?
Well,
my hat's off to you. You're a pretty powerful guy there, Robert.
I pull the strings around here. It's true.
Okay, we do have City Council person Mike Rotkin here in the studio, and Robert Norris. Michael has been in the news quite a bit for since 1979 or so, would you say, Mike? Is that when you became sort of a famous person? Not sort of, definitely.
He's infamously famous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Now you are here as a representative of the Santa Cruz City Council, which I guess has been sharply criticized in recent years for much of its behavior, much of its actions, and Robert has been a activist, particularly involved in homeless issues for quite a number of years here, and there has been proposed very recently an action whereby permits for panhandling are proposed, and that sort of spurred this edition of the KSCO Saturday Special. As it said in the promo, we're also going to be discussing other subjects such as should it be illegal for to feed the homeless people, much as it's illegal to feed animals, I suppose, in many areas.
You don't want them getting out of hand.
Yeah.
Too much meat can cause problems.
So, in any case, let's begin this edition of the Saturday Special. It's 13 past 10 on Monterey Bay News Talk, AM 1080 KSCO. My name is Michael Z, and as always, you can call us and participate in this live interactive program. The phone numbers are 479-1080 from Santa Cruz. Outside of Santa Cruz, give us a try at 761-1080. Or if you're fortunate enough to have a Cellular One mobile telephone, punch in star 1080 followed by send. And it should connect you toll and airtime free to your news talk station for the Monterey Bay, AM 1080 KSCO. Robert, am I to understand you're on your way to jail?
Well, I could well be, Mike. I was convicted about a week and a half ago in San Francisco in the first of... Well, there have been over 600 arrests in the last 5 years of the organization Food Not Bombs, which feeds homeless people twice daily at the Civic Center Plaza downtown in San Francisco. And city police have harassed the organization for years, arresting them and then not charging them. They've spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars And my case was the first they decided to take to a jury trial. I was convicted of contempt of court, which is violating a 1989 court order barring food not bombs from feeding people anywhere within the city and county of San Francisco, quote, without appropriate permits. And there's a story behind that, because food not bombs has always sought to get permits and has often succeeded, but in 1990, a year after that, the city made it illegal for any group. This law was motivated, we believe, by food not bombs to secure a park permit. So I was found guilty in a 5-day jury trial. The judge was Judge Barclay, a visiting judge from Modoc County. My chief witness, Keith McHenry, was jailed on $45,000 bail the first day, and then 3 days later, the bail was reduced to nothing, and he was released and told it was a mistake.
Was that a contempt of court?
Not at all.
No, why was he jailed?
He was jailed essentially out of another action. We believe he was jailed because they wanted to keep his testimony out of court, and they did exclude his testimony. The judge refused to issue a minute order to have him taken from the jail down to court. He was the principal witness that indicated the bad faith of the city in the whole permit process, which Food Not Bombs continued to try to go through. You see, Food Not Bombs, Michael, is an organization that has been publicizing the city's inadequate response to the homeless crisis, as well as its outright harassment of homeless people. This is even before the Matrix program began last August.
Matrix program?
Matrix program is a program by Mayor Jordan to essentially criminalize homeless people and drive them from the downtown area, now even from the outskirts. In the last couple of months, he's been arresting homeless people in the China Basin area to which homeless people were driven. But initially, it was designed to kind of a tourist-pleasing, merchant-pleasing program, similar to ones that Santa Cruz is about to
have. Camping ban.
Well, it's anti-camping, it's anti-sitting, it's anti-having a shopping cart. You can't have a blanket to cover up with. That becomes illegal. And there have been over 7,000 arrests.
So I guess they're not so bad here in Santa Cruz, after all, by comparison.
Well, they haven't made 7,000 arrests. We can say that for them. Of course, they're just beginning. They've got these new laws coming down.
Okay, Robert Norris, thanks very much. Mike Rotkin, can you summarize the current City Council of Santa Cruz position on homelessness here?
Yeah, it's a complex issue, and I will try and be very brief and give you an outline of it, and maybe we can fill it in with questions.
Sure.
And so forth. When I got elected to the City Council in 1979, I think there was a general attitude in town that the citizens didn't want to have homeless here. The police were tacitly being supported in driving homeless people out of town. There were a number of direct brutality cases, some of which eventually came to trial, in which police were systematically brutalizing homeless people. For example, beating people up who were handcuffed in the backseat of cars. The city provided no services of any kind for homeless people, no shelters, no food programs, no counseling programs, no alcohol programs. Basically, nothing was being done.
It hadn't really become a household word.
It wasn't a large issue
at that point, right?
Right.
I mean, not only here, but throughout the country.
Although it had been an issue sort of quietly since probably the late 60s in some way. There was a big debate in the city and the county of Santa Cruz about Utes, undesirable transient element, when I first came to Santa Cruz in 1969.
Uh-huh.
So there was an issue. It just wasn't anywhere near as heated up as it's been. There weren't as many homeless people. There were more adequate housing in America than there.
And there was massive harassment in the 70s.
And so there were these serious problems. The Santa Cruz City Council has changed, and we've tried to our best ability both to persuade the public, because we do live in a democracy, to persuade the public that they should be providing services for the homeless, that we should, we've passed various programs and fund shelter programs, meal programs. We probably spend, and I've never heard anyone contradict this, more per capita on homeless services in Santa Cruz than any city in the country. We probably have the only program I'm aware of that provides people with during the day, free showers, lockers where they can keep their backpacks so they don't have to drag them around with them all over town, washing machines to clean their clothes, a telephone where they can get messages if they'd like to get work. Because obviously, if you're homeless, it's hard to get employment, even if you're clean and want the work. If no one can leave you a message somewhere to tell you that the job.
How was that facilitated?
There's a operation over on near the intersection of Route 1 and Route 9.
That's a homeless shelter.
It's a homeless resource center,
actually.
Okay. A resource center, and that's just one of many services that the city funds. And so we've tried to provide a number of services for homeless people. We fund a shelter program that's run primarily by volunteers through churches and others, where people spend are able to sleep on mattresses and various nights in different churches around town and in the armory on other nights when there's more people than the churches can all hold. And at the same time, we're quite concerned about various kinds of behavior that's taking place that's not necessarily linked to the homeless, although the homeless, as I'm sure Robert will explain, are sometimes implicated in this, in that we are trying to regulate the kind of behavior that people carry on in public. We don't want to have people aggressively panhandling people in our downtown. We don't want to have people sleeping in the streets, either in cars or in sidewalks. And so we're in a situation that probably pleases neither the left nor the right in some way, in that we do think that there's certain kinds of behavior that's unacceptable in public. We, on the other hand, think that the homeless a very mixed group of people, and many of them deserve various kinds of services, and the city tries to provide those. So that's the situation, in a way, is that, without whining about it, that we're caught in the middle between people who think we should be driving people out of town and other people who think that to regulate any form of regulation on public behavior is implicitly driving people out of town. And I think we're trying to do something that we really look at it, that is provide service for homeless people, do our fair share of service provision. We probably provide a lot more services than meets our immediate homeless population's needs, and of course we don't provide every service and everything
every person might want.
Let me just wrap up.
Yeah.
But, you know, totally provide every service that people need. There's a homeless problem in the country that the city of Santa Cruz can't fix, but we're trying to provide services on the one hand, and on the other trying to regulate what we find unacceptable behavior in public, which has often more to do with people who are not homeless, but sometimes the homeless are implicated in that.
This is the KSCO Saturday Special. You're listening to Michael Zwirling at KSCO Studios, moderating News Talk Radio, and in the studio with me as guest discussing the topic of homelessness and panhandling and permits and so forth are Santa Cruz City Councilperson Mike Rotkin and homeless advocate Robert Norris. Robert, I know you want to respond. I've got a quick question for you. Why is it that you haven't been a fixture in Santa Cruz for a while? What is it that got you to go to San Francisco or other places where you've been politically active?
The city council drove me out of town. No, actually what happened was
We wish, actually.
I keep coming back.
You're a real thorn in their side, aren't you?
Well, actually, I'm technically homeless now. I actually haven't had a place where I've been resident for about a year and a half now, although I've been doing my major work in Santa Barbara with the Legal Defense Center, which has been pursuing a lawsuit, which I hope to bring up a bit later in the program, in fact, maybe even sooner, which essentially makes the city council's actions at the current time and the actions of the police force under its direction illegal in terms of their harassment of homeless people under the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. But before I get into that, let me go back and refer to a few things that Mike said, Mike Rotkin, that is, Mike Zwirling. The idea that you have to persuade the public that city council is some kind of a mediating body, I know that has politicians feel they have to do this, and no doubt in some sense they do. But the idea of somehow mediating between bigotry and justice to me is a very distasteful one. In the 40s in New York, the reason that the cities did not desegregate the swimming pools there was not because they were afraid, because it was illegal, but because they were afraid, not even because there were complaints, but because they were afraid of what people might say or might do. Often discrimination continues because of these kinds of fears that politicians have. We're not talking about spending either. Mike has talked about the spending of the Santa Cruz City Council. Actually, I've been around for some of that period, around on and off earlier in the 80s as well. Most of the spending around homeless issues has not in any way dealt with the basic problem that Santa Cruz homeless people face as far as sleeping goes. There is currently a shelter emergency since 1990, which I'm sure Mr. Rockin will agree. It was declared by the Santa Cruz City Council, was declared by a county task force, headed or at least involving Paul Brindell. It's a reality. There is insufficient shelter or place, legal place for people to sleep for the overwhelming majority of homeless people. This, in spite of the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which Mike points out does do good things, because, by the way, activists put themselves on the line and continue to get arrested and bring to the council's unwilling attention the deficiencies of that program.
I would dispute that completely, but go on.
Yeah, I bet you would.
I don't think that's what caused us to do it, but go ahead.
Well, I think that for years the council has ignored the deficiencies of the program, we had to bring that to their attention by dramatic means, because, in fact, debate with the council doesn't do any good. We've sought to put the sleeping ban itself up for discussion, and we cannot get a hearing before city council on that issue. The day center is a good thing. I guess it's the Homeless Resources Center. I'm not quite sure what it's called. It's very slow in coming. It's very, very costly. But, you know, insofar as people having storage lockers, a place to phone, sure, this is great stuff. But it is also the excuse that is now being used by some city council members, as we knew it would be, for driving homeless people away from the downtown area. That's going to, and that is the nub and the core of these laws that the city council is considering. They are laws that are the worst in the state. Now, Santa Cruz currently has the worst sleeping ban in the state. There is no other city in the state that criminalizes sleeping on private property. Most sleeping on private property. Santa Cruz is the only place where if you have your mother visit in her van and she's parked in your driveway, she can be arrested for sleeping. If you are sleeping on top of your house, you can be ticketed because you're not inside a domicile. If you fall asleep in a restaurant, you can be arrested, as Jack Bassett did in great numbers in 1989 with a restaurant called Las Chapalas on Front Street. This is the worst city for sleeping laws in the entire state, and I'm not saying it's worse than San Francisco at the present time, because San Francisco is currently engaging in active harassment efforts using any ordinances it can. But in terms of the law, this is the worst.
Okay, let's let Mike Rotkin talk. Mike from Boulder Creek, we know you're on the line. Thanks for holding. Hold just a little bit longer. We'll be getting to you. Go ahead, Mike Rotkin.
Well, I just think perhaps a lot of our conversation today will take the following form, in which Robert Norris will tell you what my motivation is and why the council's doing various things, and I just dispute that that's what's happening. I'm a lifelong progressive, an active member of, as I'm sure many of your listeners will not be pleased, the ACLU. I've helped serve myself, working in social programs with people. I'm not motivated to try and provide social programs for people as a means of justifying doing other nasty things to them. We provide social programs because we're concerned about people's needs. We provide, in the city of Santa Cruz, programs for senior citizens so they have food. We provide child care programs, a whole wide range of various social programs here. And there's no question in my mind that the vast, majority of the council members in the past, if not all of them, who have supported various social programs, which has not been all of them, but those that have supported them because they believe in the programs. They believe that various people have needs that should be met. And as I said, we also believe that certain kinds of behavior is unacceptable in public and needs to be regulated, but we're not passing the social... I think I've lost my...
No, you're on. Go ahead.
That the social programs we fund because we care about those things. Secondly, Robert suggests that it's these demonstrations that he's been involved in and helped support that have driven us to finally recognize the needs of the homeless, and I would say that quite the reverse. These demonstrations have been completely counterproductive. The years of work that I've done, actually, with others, knocking on doors, going out and talking to the public, giving public speeches on KSCO and writing articles in the newspaper and elsewhere, explaining to people that we do have problems, that the homeless have problems that need to be met, I would think indicate in some way that we do care about these problems. And I would say, in my experience, that these demonstrations make it more difficult for us to convince citizens in this community that we should provide services for the homeless. They see not the real needs of the homeless, people who are mentally ill, people who have incredible difficult time finding work, who would work if they could find it, and so forth, the whole range of homeless people. What they see are a number of demonstrators, young people in their early 20s or late teens, demonstrating on the streets, often their own worst enemies when they come to public hearings, and they think, well, that's what the homeless are like. Why should I work at a job I don't like much to provide services for these kinds of people?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's been quite counterproductive, the demonstrations that they've been involved in, and we don't need to be motivated by a number of demonstrators tying up our downtown with demonstrations.
Well, I don't think motivation is the point. I think it's the actual actions and inaction the city council has taken that speaks for itself. I mean, Mike is a good guy. I like Mike as an individual. I got no problem with him. I think he's a good teacher. I applaud his stand against police abuse in Elfland up in 1991 on the campus. However, it's his actions on the city council and the actions of his confreres there that I'm concerned with. As in many cities, people who call themselves progressives appeal to the so-called progressive community, particularly the university community, in order to get a vote. And they get elected. But as you can see by examining the council's record, they don't act on issues of justice. We're not talking about social services. I'm not talking about more funding for social services or taking money out of your pocket. I'm talking about putting money in your pocket, having the police stop the harassment and arrests of people who are in a situation where they can do no else than what they do. Now, the demonstrators who demonstrate downtown that Mike feels are counterproductive, I'd like to see, neater, cleaner, nicer demonstrators. But when the council refuses to act and then acts specifically in response to the demonstrations to propose a whole series of laws criminalizing people from sitting on the mall, a traditional activity in Santa Cruz, from asking for spare change, which is, you can say no, can't you, folks? I mean, it's always possible to just say no. And if somebody harasses you, you call an officer and you say, arrest that guy. You know, he's engaging in abusive behavior. And believe me, the police will arrest that guy.
Mike, can it be true that Robert Norris has asserted earlier, that a person may be arrested for falling asleep in a restaurant?
Well,
Is he over-dramatizing this?
Oh, I think he's over-dramatizing in the sense that no one that I'm aware of has ever been arrested for sleeping in
a restaurant. But they can be.
Several dozen people were arrested in 1989, as I said before.
I would like Robert to describe this as a typical restaurant scene where people have gone off to eat a meal and happened to fall asleep somehow while they were eating, as opposed to a deliberate demonstration to try and call a place a restaurant, use it as a place to have people spend the night and sleep, and then somehow try and say, oh, they arrested people who fell asleep in a restaurant.
It was a restaurant which a woman after the earthquake opened up for homeless people to have coffee in and nod out on if necessary, because there was no legal place to sleep, because Mayor Marty Wormhout at that time ordered the arrest of homeless people sleeping in front of the Civic Center auditorium 4 days after the earthquake. That's the Marty Wormhout who is running for election, by the way, right now, and I encourage listeners to ask Marty if she still maintains her same anti-homeless policies, such as arresting homeless people at the town clock. This is the same issue. Homeless people being arrested at the town clock by police in riot gear, dozens, and the biggest police operation, dozens strong, and the biggest police operation Santa Cruz has ever seen in 1989 was the brainchild of Marty Wormhout. Now, she's also part of the progressive gang at City Council, and I think that this is the same mentality that is ruling today, and unfortunately, it seems to be getting worse.
Robert, if I could just get a quick word in here.
Sure, Mike.
I think your listeners have now a sense why the City Council gets involved in fairly, what may appear on the surface, fairly bizarre kinds of ordinances to try and regulate various kinds of behavior. Because, for example, and this is the kind of thing that happens, if somebody decides that they do want to sleep on a sidewalk, and all they have to do, as far as Robert's concerned, is put the sign restaurant in front of them, and then they would be protected. I'm not exaggerating here. The problem we have is any law that you might be able to draft, people can find ways around it unless you draft it incredibly carefully and technically. The idea of giving people permits for panhandling, for example, is on the surface of it completely absurd, and I'm not sure yet that I'm even going to support that particular way of regulating the problem. But the issue is, how can you draft a law that's actually enforceable, that you can find some way to try and deal with the problems that people raise to try and get around the intent of what you're doing? So, no, the City of Santa Cruz is not out there arresting people for sleeping on their roof, or if your mother-in-law comes.
They're arresting people.
Let me finish, Robert. And they sleep in her van in your driveway. That's not what we're about doing. But if we don't draft the law adequately, what happens is we end up with a situation where people will find ways to subvert the actual intent of what we're trying to do in terms of regulating the behavior. Robert, for example, says, well, we can deal with aggressive panhandling because if somebody aggressively panhandles, you just call the police, that'll solve the problem. That doesn't deal with the fact that, for example, some woman might be walking, I don't want to say it has to be a woman, but some woman's walking down the street with three kids, and two big strapping guys come up to her and demand spare change from her. Now, it's not just that she said no and they pursued her. The very fact that they get completely in her face, block the sidewalk so she can't walk by them, is a form of intimidation. It's nothing less, really, than extortion.
That's assault.
Nothing less than extortion that's going on. And she may not call the police. She may just be terrorized, leave the mall, never come shopping downtown again. And so we have a situation where Robert would like us to say, well, everything will take care of itself. People will be reasonable. Behavior will regulate itself. And if people are out of line, you can use existing laws to try and enforce things. But it doesn't seem to work in practice. practice. So we get stuck in a situation where we have to very carefully draft additional laws that may seem draconian on the surface. We think they're going to be enforced reasonably. We don't think we're going to use them against people. We're not, for example, in the city of Santa Cruz, I'm sure some of your listeners will be thrilled by this, we are not trying to stop people from passively panhandling, unlike almost every city in the country. We don't care if people sit on a bench and hold a sign saying, give me some money, you know, for I'll work for food, or just give me money or whatever. We're concerned about people who are involved in intimidating behavior, aggressively panhandling people, stopping them from going about their business downtown, whether that's visiting friends or shopping or whatever they're doing. And that's what we're trying to regulate. And it's going to be difficult to do that in a way that's both constitutional. I don't want to violate anybody's right to free speech. I'm not interested in violating somebody's ability just to hang out on the mall and talk with friends, which is something the mall has always been available for. But we do want to stop certain kinds of behavior that's simply unacceptable. That doesn't make us brutes. That doesn't make us people that want to drive the homeless into oblivion or that don't care about their civil liberties or their concerns. But it does mean that we think that at a certain point there's kinds of behavior that needs to be regulated.
I don't think the city council does care about the civil liberties of a significant group of people, namely poor people in Santa Cruz. But again, we can't get into motivation. We've got to look at the clear meaning and the clear impact of what the city council is doing. But briefly wrapping it up, the reason there's so many demonstrations is because Mike's council refuses to actually engage in any real dialogue with homeless people over the paramount issue which homeless people have been concerned about the last 5 or 6 years, which is the sleeping ban. And if he's concerned about unacceptable behavior, he has only himself and his council to blame for not providing a democratic avenue for them to follow. In fact, protest is democratic too, but it's more dramatic. And indeed, it alarms the merchants. And I think that's Mike's concern.
The one sentence wrap up with that is that I have made myself available to meet with anybody, any time or place, to talk about issues.
We're talking about
homeless. And the city council, every other Tuesday at our regular meeting,
listens to
a long, steady stream of abuse about how we treat the homeless.
Robert,
it's not as if we're not open to a public forum.
Robert, hopefully there are some homeless people who have access to a radio who are listening today and
indeed
might be able to call in. Speaking of call-ins, let's go to our first caller, Mike from Boulder Creek, has been waiting on line 4 for quite a while. Good morning, Mike. You're finally on the air. Thanks for calling KSCO Saturday Special.
Yeah, Michael, with your permission, I would be okay if I identified myself with my full name, but I know both these men pretty well.
Go ahead.
Mike Mason. Hello, Bob. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
The problem that is really vexed a lot of us who have gotten fairly close to this issue and have followed it closely is something that Robert actually gave me the name for. Unfortunately, he gave me the name for it in using it as a pejorative against some real heroes in our community, namely the William James Association, specifically Fred Gray type people, and Paul Lee and Paige Smith, who've done so much. And I know that I don't think Mike Rotkin feels that those gentlemen I mentioned in that association, I mentioned in the River Street Shelter that I mentioned, are poverty pimps. I hope it isn't too harsh to call Robert North a poverty pimp.
You're not getting paid, Mike.
I'll tell you what, Robert. You know what you're getting right now. I'm not going to get angry, because the last time I got angry with you, I ended up in the backseat of a patrol car with Wonton Jacobs. I'm not going to get angry, but
I did nothing. I'm innocent.
I will tell you this, Robert. A lot of the reason why you do not resonate with progressives and male progressives is because you seem to think that the sum total of your existence on Earth is to have forums and to talk. You are brilliant. And I've told you that to your face, behind closed doors and in negotiations. You are brilliant, and you make a tremendous presentation. I almost think it's a disservice to give you a public forum, because I think you abuse it. In conclusion...
I hope not.
Well, in conclusion, hey, that's an attack, and you can respond as you want. I'm not so sure whether or not Mike wants to tie in with me on that, but that's how I feel as a person who would support
let
your position.
Let me respond to that.
If it were not for you.
Let's just say it's a lucky thing you're up in Boulder Creek.
Yeah,
I'm here.
I challenge you to a duel at dawn.
Indeed, be more than happy to...
We can have a sleeping duel and see who gets arrested first.
I don't want to talk about that. Michael Z, you know, downtown, what gets lost in this dialogue? Lots of times are some decent, struggling people who I know for a fact are strung out several years in arrears trying to make a living being faithful to the mall. John Lester comes to mind, and thousands of others, hundreds of others. And they are becoming the victims. And it seems so odd to me that a progressive council would be brutalizing justice and things like that, when anybody that knows Mike Rotkin, as long as many of us have known us, my goodness, I don't know, it's like calling Gandhi a pugnace or something like that, or
what?
A pugilist.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Going
there's a woman who runs the Del Mar Theater, and we had a talk the other day. Her name is, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me, Rachel Thompson Beck. And she says it just breaks my heart because after my people line up to see films, a very high percentage of them say, we will never come back again. A little gal who works there, I can say little gal, says that she's going to apply for a job as a docent or a host because that's what she's doing already for half the pay. Most of her job is just trying to keep a dressy pantomimes away from people, just trying to see a movie, and they don't come back. I blame Robert Norris and other poverty pimps like him for that. I don't think he's responsible. I'm sorry he's getting an opportunity to sway people.
You're repeating yourself, Mike. Let me respond to this, okay?
No, I don't. If it's okay with you, Robert, let me just make my statement. And, hey, believe me, you and my partner can argue a lot better than you and I can argue because we have a difference. I just want you characterized as you characterize decent people who are trying to help the homeless. And I think it's important for the audience to know that they're not listening to a brilliant fellow who's got this great calling. They're listening to a self-promoter who's built a reputation and a cottage industry out of really bringing a lot of grief to people who are trying to make a situation better.
You sound a little like Rush Limbaugh on how he used to talk about Mitch Snyder.
Mitch Snyder is Mitch Snyder. And, boy, I'll tell you again, Mitch Snyder is Mitch Snyder.
Was Mitch Snyder.
And never the twain shall meet.
Actually, we did meet once, but that's
not matter. Sure Mitch Snyder was a saint. But Robert Norris
Mike, while you're on the line, maybe I could respond, so in case I make any false statements or things you regard as false, you can respond.
With humor and try to make me look like a fool.
I'm not trying to make you look like a fool, Mike.
Yeah, I know. I do that well enough.
No, I'm not saying you do it well enough yourself either. I know you have a genuine concern about this stuff, and... I've seen you out there trying to help people. I've seen you involved in committee meetings trying to deal with police misconduct or, police review.
That did not make me try to like you. You are so...
I'm not trying to make you try to like me, Mike. That's an impossibility. But, let me respond to the issues you've raised, which is the question of poverty pimps. Poverty pimps are people who get a lot of money from the Santa Cruz City Council and other state and federal agencies, much of which doesn't get to homeless people. And my primary beef with the William James Association, Fred Gray, Paul Lee, people of that sort, is that they have been in a position of some power as far as funding goes. They've had a piece of property, for instance, for years, which was got at an exorbitant rate with homeless federal funding over at the River Street Shelter, which homeless people should be used for people to be able to sleep on. It is arguably the only one, an exception to the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, in that it is behind a domicile in a fenced-in backyard, which is one of the exceptions to the sleeping ban, which says you can't sleep anywhere after 11 o'clock at night, period. Sleep, not lie down, but sleep. So it's illegal to sleep. Let me finish, Mark. I gave you a while. Let me finish what I'm saying.
Robert, you're the king of interruptions.
Well, I'm not. No. I'm going to finish. I'm going to try to finish what I was saying. And what I was saying was that poverty pimps. The reason that I have criticized these people is because they refuse to stand up for homeless people, for instance, who have slept on their property. And Mike and I had a go around about this 2 years ago on this radio station, that we, that this property is private property. It could arguably be used for a homeless sanctuary. In fact, the city council tried to do that in 1990. There were only two people, to their credit, voted for it, Byers and Kennedy, but it wasn't done. And because... William James continues to pursue its own private projects like Community House.
I think it was Fires and Lane, actually.
You're quite right. Kennedy wasn't on the council. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, and if he was, never mind. Go on.
So anyway, poverty pimps are people who take a lot of money and then get, siphon it off.
Just a quick comment so that the station doesn't get sued for libel. neither Paul Lee nor Paige Smith has ever taken a nickel from the programs they've helped try and put together. They've put countless hours. Paul Lee and Paige Smith were sleeping at the shelter they helped put together back on Cedar Street. In the middle 70s.
That was a good shelter.
In the middle 80s.
That was a long time ago.
They put that together. They spent, these are people who have already reached the age of retirement and, put productive lives into educating young people. And they came upon the problem of the homeless and for moral reasons felt that they had to do something about it. And they in fact, did pressure the city council to begin taking action. They've never made a nickel off of the programs that they've helped start. And so to call them poverty pimps is really an outrage.
Is that what happened here? Did I miss something?
Well, no, no. Well, I think poverty pimps are those people who take money, as many social institutions do, and they hire expensive administrators who get paid full-time salary. I'm not going to apologize for anything I'm saying, Mike.
Let Mike talk for a second.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Mike in Boulder.
Okay, Mike Mason.
I've never said this before publicly. The only person who knows this now is Jack Bassett. But in solidarity to the homeless, I lived as a homeless man between August and December of 1991. I was stopped many times. I slept in a little Mazda truck, and I've never been treated better by the police in this community.
Yeah, but you were an aide to Scott Kennedy at the time.
Just stop interrupting. Can you ever have a conversation without interrupting, trying to disrupt another person's rap? It is so
go ahead, Mike. Just go ahead.
Are you aware of how effective it is? Is that why you do it, Robert?
I'm aware when you're concealing a fact, and I think it should be brought out, yeah.
Can you keep your mouth shut while another person makes a point? Are you humanly capable of it?
Go ahead and speak, Mike.
Thank you. So anyway, I went into Jack Bassett after my three-month experiment, by the way.
Jack Bassett is the chief of police.
Chief of police, by the
city
way,
of Santa Cruz.
I had resources. I was homeless by choice. I was homeless in solidarity. I was homeless to see what it was like. And I wasn't proud of it or negative about it. I just wanted to know. And I went into Jack and I said, boy, I tell you, the reason why I at this time didn't support a police gun is I'm amazed and thrilled to live in a community that is just as minded as this community, with a just council, good people. And here Mr. Norris is making it sound an awful lot like Berlin in 1938 in his most strident rhetoric. And I'm
down to the wall sometime, Mike.
By the way, you know what? After my very, very vivid lecture on interrupting, it actually took for about 30 seconds. Congratulations. Okay.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Now you've gotten me angry again, and that's fine. But I will tell you this, Mr. Norris. I believe I know as much about the homeless condition and human issues justice as you do, and you, sir.
I hope you don't assault me like you assaulted Tony Mello.
Hey,
that would be unfortunate.
Thank you very much. I assaulted him. But you know what?
Yeah, okay.
You know why I assaulted him?
The producers here are giving me the high sign. It's time to get to all of our many. What was it? Oh, what did you say? Oh, okay. I didn't read that. I thought you were telling me to get to the next caller. Yeah, you are telling me that. Thank you very much, Mike from Boulder Creek. Asa, line 5, it's your turn. You're in Live Oak, and welcome to the Saturday special on KSCO.
I certainly feel like a non-combatant. I never heard a bunch of grown people behave so terribly. I think you all are hilarious. I realize that you, Robert Norton, all I know about you is your letters to the editor. And and I, unfortunately, am, what do you call it, I like a roof over my head, and I like warm weather, especially in the rain.
Me too.
And I sympathize with people who are truly unfortunate. I give money to the Salvation Army. I mean, I give money to people who do it. I don't do it. I'm a coward because I'm a physical coward. I don't like icky, rainy, cold stuff. But I also feel very sorry for the poor people that are in business and have their lives on the line and their financial lives on the line. And I feel that people like Robert Norris, for reasons that are totally bewildering to me for an intelligent person, has made a career. Now, I don't know if his ego is the thing that has no home or what. I doubt that he has done any good for the homeless people other than rattling his chops. And only in the newspapers, mind you, is all I know in this morning on the radio. But I think that it is unlikely that he personally has done any good for anybody except to suffer some reason agitate in a community which I certainly wouldn't find myself defending in Santa Cruz City Council under normal conditions. But if they are assaulted by his lip as often as he would like to be assaulting it to them, then my sympathy would dwell with them. And my primary sympathy is with the people that, when they have ugliness on their doorstep, want to sweep it off. Why? Oh, why would you encourage the ugliness to stay on the doorstep? Why wouldn't you put it in the backyard with the garbage? I don't understand.
Put the homeless with the garbage? Is that what you're saying, madam?
Yes, exactly. Because what I'm saying is you are encouraging the garbage to stay constantly present. And I don't see any reason for that, because you have intelligence. You have brains. For some reason or other, you don't want to improve the lives.
Are you aware that business was up this Christmas season on the mall, according to the Santa Cruz Sentinel?
I have no idea. Were you one of the ones that bought?
I'm sorry?
Were you one of the ones that bought?
That bought?
Yes. Did you buy anything? Did you put anything?
Oh, yeah. I'm a constant patron.
Isn't that when you were in San Francisco?
No. I came through and personally tried to purchase from those poor downtrodden merchants down on the mall who needed suspension.
Business was up after an earthquake. There's a big surprise.
Business was up this season.
We hope it goes up again.
That's what the Sentinel said. But, I mean, you can believe the Sentinel.
If it was, then God is good. I mean, everybody's having. But the point is, it is not up because of you and your campaigns, believe me, because the normal person.
Well, there are other things in life than business, ma'am. I mean, that unfortunately is the reality of our society. I mean, business certainly is one factor, and I think that, you know, I'm as sympathetic with merchants as anybody else.
Normal people are really entitled to their space, too, you know.
Yeah, but is their space include every inch of the mall? That's the question.
Well, why not?
Why not? Because there's a community that's larger than the merchants. That's why.
They build a little playpen for you people. They could drink and dope and do whatever they want to.
A playpen for we people?
We could put a
big... Have you ever had a poor relative who was homeless, ma'am? I mean, are you going to...
I've had my children have been homeless. I put them up.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
I mean, you don't... I doubt that you put anybody up. All you do is talk.
I have put people up, yes. I mean, it's true. When I was renting a room, I put people up. And I'm glad you did, too. I mean, we all need that. But there's a bunch of people that are homeless because of the economic conditions, which, as you know, are not the best.
I doubt that the ones that are camping with you are the ones that are there because of the... I bet they are happy.
Camping with me? Nobody's camping with me at the moment.
You've been doing this. I have been reading your ranting ever since I came to town.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it.
And you haven't eliminated one of them, I'll bet. Anyway, that's my message.
Thank you, Asa.
Thank you, Asa.
Mike Rodkin has been seemingly vacillating about whether or not to utter a witticism. Go ahead, Mike, if you've decided to do it.
I think the moment passed.
Oh, shucks, okay. All right, this is the KSCO Saturday Special, 10 minutes before 11 on Monterey Bay News Talk, AM 1080 KSCO. Michael Z, along with Robert Norris, homeless advocate, Michael Rotkin, Santa Cruz City Councilman, and you, the callers, 479-1080 or 761-1080. We're going to take a real quick break, then we're going to come back to John in Watsonville. So stay with us, Monterey Bay.
You do have a lot.
Guess who? KSCO Saturday Special. We're here with Mike Rotkin and Robert Norris talking about homeless. I promise that we would go back to John in Watsonville, since that's not a toll call, and toll call San Jose is a toll call. We're going to go to Craig. Craig, thanks for waiting. It's your turn.
Yeah, hello, boss. I have an idea that involves real work, which means probably both of your guests probably hate this idea. But anyways, I was thinking, you know, why don't you try to... These homeless people, why don't you try and arrange something with the growers out in Salinas, you know, to get these people jobs working out in the field? Now, I know that once you approach these farmers or growers, you know, they're not going to like this idea because it's a well-known fact that, you know, white people don't work very good out there doing manual labor. It's mostly that's why they hire Mexicans, illegal aliens. You know, my brother has a warehouse business out in Salinas. We've had white guys working for us doing manual labor, and frankly, they're not worth a damn. But what you can do, the people who really do want to work, you can send them over there. You can find out who these people are, who really wants to, you know, work instead of being a bum out there. Now, I know you guys probably don't like this idea, and you have reasons already why this is just a lousy thing to do, but let's hear it.
Okay, if I can respond just quickly. This is Mike Rodkin from the council. First of all, your comment at the beginning that we didn't like work or something, I hold two jobs, so I'm obviously like a
That's
fool.
That's a good idea.
I'm a fool for work. But
and at least he looks white.
But the,
he's got a suntan.
The,
I'm talking manual labor.
No, I understand. I've done a lot of manual labor in my life. I've worked as a construction worker. I've had a lot of difficult jobs. I've done farm work.
Okay,
let's get to your point.
Okay.
There are a number of different kinds of people out there that are homeless for a range of different kinds of reasons. Some of the people that are out that are homeless are incapable of doing work. They have mental health problems or physical health problems that simply nobody would want to hire them. Your friends who work in agriculture would not be able to make use of these folks. They honestly are beyond, they have an addiction of some kind and they're strung out. They're simply unable to do work. This is not to justify this lifestyle or say it's a wonderful thing. I think that these people need to be in various kinds of programs. They need to try and turn their lives around. The city and private individuals need to do what they can to provide them with opportunities to turn their lives around. You can't make someone turn their life around, but you try and give them opportunities where they can get in a program that will make a difference.
Okay, can I break?
There's also people who are out there who are homeless, who the people that I think you're trying to address, who are able-bodied, who are not mentally ill, who perhaps are homeless and simply can't afford to be in a house. Some of these people have jobs. A fair number of the people who are homeless have a job, very low income, minimum wage job, and they, for whatever reason, they've lost their savings. They can't come up with the first, last, and deposit for security, and it takes quite a bit to do that. In other words, they can't come up with 3 months' rent all of a sudden, in a moment, and they need programs that would help them get into a place. They probably could afford to pay rent at a low rent place. The problem there, of course, is we don't have enough housing in our society. Even a city like Santa Cruz, farm, and you know, they're quite physically able to do so. And I don't disagree that those people, if there was a way to do it and to sort them out from the others, to make them go to work, I'd do it in a moment. The problem is, how do you do that in a and end up basically stigmatizing and making it really, really difficult for the people who would work, who have jobs now, the people who have other kinds of situations. We don't know how to put together a jobs program. If you know some employer who would be actually willing to hire unemployed people, I'm sure we could line them up for you any day you'd like. They could go to the San Lorenzo Lumber Company, just to name one, or Kmart down in Soquel, and they can find 30 people who are standing there looking for work who will work for dirt cheap wages. You don't have to pay them taxes. You don't have to, you know, you can violate anything you'd ever want to violate with them. The working conditions could be awful. There are a lot of people that are out of work and would love to have work to do. But the problem is, you can't solve the homeless problem, as difficult as it is, simply by saying, let's make all these people go down and work in the fields. The other thing, as you pointed out, and I think this is really true, I've done farm work. You're not going to get somebody, that's skilled labor. You know, cutting celery, for example.
Oh, come on. They could learn that real fast.
If you've ever done farm work, which I've done, you know that it's not something that you learn real fast.
They can learn it. Can I finally respond?
Sure, please.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I have a cousin who works in agriculture down in San Luis Obispo. That's what they do. They get mentally ill people. You know, you could be the worst drugged out heroin addict hippie around, and you know they can go out there and pick lettuce. You know, they don't. You don't even have to be normal, you know, to go out there and do that.
You could do it, but the question is, what farmer would want to hire somebody who kind of moves slowly from plant to plant, throwing it into a bag? City of Santa Cruz, you know, the city of Santa Cruz does help fund. We provide free land for a homeless.
You don't want to let me finish, do you, on my point?
No, I was trying to respond to the point that you were making, and I'll be happy to let you make other points if you like.
Right. Well, my point is that you're wrong. You know, it doesn't take a lot. If they're out there working, then they don't have time to take drugs or alcohol. That's their whole damn problem. They don't have anything to do. They sit around all day.
No, I understand your point morally that they should have to work. What I'm saying is that no grower, they're in the business of making money from agriculture. No reasonable grower wants to hire somebody that wanders around through the fields picking up lettuce. They need to have people that move. Have you ever seen people pick lettuce?
That's right.
They move rapidly to the field. They work harder than than anybody else in our society.
That's what I'm saying.
And they're not going to be interested in hiring somebody. They would lose money hiring somebody, no matter what they paid them. They would lose money at the rate that these people would tend to pick lettuce.
I'd like to interject here something. I think it's most of the people with actually alcohol problems live in houses. I think homeless get a bad rap on this. And I think if you've got a job, so you want to offer homeless people, I know that when I was working with them, we would have people that were raising their hands, get us work. And that's what's happening. And it's really nothing you can argue. I think your argument is based on a feeling you have, which is these are just a bunch of worthless bums, you know, and that's your feeling, and there you are. What can you say about it?
I think most of them are, but I want to say this. You can quickly find out who these people are. If you can... You know,
why don't you come down and offer some work? You know, Mike has already told you, as a city council person, he would love to set you up with a...
We've had homeless people working.
Great.
I've done that. You haven't.
No, that's not true.
I've supervised these people, you know, and we've gotten them jobs, me and my family.
But see, this isn't the subject we're trying to discuss here on the air. The subject on the air is new laws being proposed by the city council to harass not only the homeless, but everybody downtown.
We've almost had a whole hour of this program and haven't even got to that.
I want to get to the laws. I mean, I wish we could. That's what I'm trying to do.
You guys don't want to take the initiative here. And I bet you if you just sat down with some of these growers or farmers or call them on the phone and just explain them, hey, you know, why don't you try giving these people a chance? You could always fire them. The first day,
well, I think if people don't have any sleep because of the law that Mike Rodkin currently champions, they're not going to be very good as workers. And I think that we should get back to the subject of those laws. That's what I'd like to
say. Let me just say that I've spent hundreds, and I mean hundreds of hours, calling people from various churches to participate in programs providing shelter for people, calling employers, asking them if they had any kinds of possible work for people, not just for homeless, but for unemployed people. I have done that. The city council hires people that do that kind of work in addition, but I just done it myself as a volunteer. here. And so my experience is that there aren't that many jobs out there that are just begging for someone who has a problem to come take them. It's just not the reality in our society, unfortunately.
And I think our job right here is to get back to the subject, which is, for instance, I'd like to return to the question of feeding homeless people. I mean, I'm going to go to jail for it probably 2 to 6 months or after costing taxpayers $15,000 to $20,000, and that's not at my wish. That's at the wish of San Francisco authorities. Santa Cruz has a similar injunction that they are not currently enforcing, but that a similar type policy was enforced big time in 1989, and I'm afraid may well be enforced again. And I believe Councilmember Rotkin voted privately or secretly for this last April to make serving the homeless a free
crime. Robert, we have fewer than 30 seconds before we have to break for the news. This is what we call a news tease for 11 o'clock.
Clinton, Michael.
Goodbye, Craig. Thanks for calling. Clinton reasserts threat of airstrikes, American war. The pace of the program has been shattered here. Speaking of shattered, it says scattered. Scattered rain showers today, mostly light from 20 miles south of Red Bluff to 10 miles south of Santa Cruz. The heaviest rain showers will be during the hour located. What does this stupid thing mean? I'm
confused
about it. The weather report doesn't make any sense at all.
It's wet out there, folks. Better put a raincoat on.
Particularly if you're homeless, yes.
All right. So let's begin the hour number two of the Saturday special with Edward James Olmos telling us that he loves to listen to our station.
Hi, I'm Edward James Olmos. Whenever I'm in the Monterey Bay area, I always tune in to Monterey Bay News Talk Radio, AM 1080 KSCO, on your dial.
Now, our classic phone call KSCO jingle.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO.
Okay, let's see if we can polish this thing out, make it sound right the way it's supposed to here. It's 7 minutes past 11 on KSCO AM 1080, and we are talking homeless and sleeping bands and so forth.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
This is Scott Kennedy from the Santa Cruz City Council. I think the KSCO is a remarkable local resource that it broadcasts public testimony and public hearings of the City Council and gives the listeners a chance to talk direct at some length with elected representatives of our local government. So I recommend it. Good Morning Monterey Bay, The Noon Balloon, even Rush Limbaugh is good for a laugh.
A town that needs the Rush Limbaugh award-winning radio program, Santa Cruz, California. A true haven for fuzzy thinking, ultra-left-wing liberals, spaced-out, sparse-bearded hippies, and arrogant politicians with absolutely zero business sense. The what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine mentality certainly alive and well in Santa Cruz, but never fear, you people, I, Rush Limbaugh, will relentlessly continue to do all I can to bring reason and sanity to Santa Cruz each weekday morning, 9 to noon, right here on KSCO AM 1080. Join me.
Pregnant with information, education, and controversy. AM 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back, Monterey Bay. 9 after 11. 9 minutes.
We've got all of Rush's categories covered with just two of us in the guests here.
Well, we don't need Gush Dumbo now that we got the City Council. That's what I look at.
Santa Cruz City Councilman Mike Rotkin is here in the studio with me as is Robert Norris, a homeless advocate that many people feel is less than sincere.
A bad boy.
Yeah.
Certainly a bad boy, yes.
Well, nonetheless, Robert, people, you have succeeded in making people associate you with the plight of the homeless, and so you are a very appropriate guest to have in the studio today when we are discussing this subject.
I think the issue really isn't me. Again, I hope we can turn our sights on the issue of a series of I call them anti-homeless laws, but they're actually laws.
And that's what we're going to do this hour for sure.
Right.
Let's keep that in mind, callers. I apologize for having so many callers online holding for the better part of the last hour. And we are going to take our next caller, John, from Watsonville right now. But we will let's agree here now to use this hour to discuss the prospect of permits for panhandling and so forth. John Watsonville, it's finally your turn. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning,
gentlemen. There, I was going to ask a question a little broader than the so-called permits that you've been talking about. Homelessness is a national issue. I think we all can agree to that, and I don't see two fellows there who objective, and I'll give them both the benefit of the doubt, is to help the homeless get back on their feet and be productive citizens like they're entitled to. I think it's a national problem, and I can't see why all these different factions that are battling over what to do or what to not to do in helping the homeless can get together and simply make it a front-burning issue throughout the country. I know the president has come out with figures that state something like 7 million in the past several years have been homeless. Now, that's a very dangerous figure, I think, in my estimation, in a country that is as prosperous as the United States. And therefore, Santa Cruz, compared to Watson, where I live, is doing a bang-up job and trying to provide services for these unfortunate people. And there, by the grace of God, go I and the rest of you there. And what I'm saying is that if we don't make this a top issue, I thought it should have been discussed in the last presidential campaign. It was not, in like most movements that try to do good for their fellow man, they seem to have more friction within their own particular organizations, and they kind of cloud the issue as to what really can effectively be done. So I'd like to have your opinions. What can be done on a national scale to bring this to the forefront?
That's such an open topic, you know. I my response to that is always to look at it locally, although you're quite right. Nationally, you need a crash program. Statewide, you need a crash program. I'd like to see Mike and the city council get together with other cities to pass essentially a law which, at the statewide level, decriminalizes homelessness and requires each city to have certain areas where it's legal to park your vehicles if you're homeless, low-income campgrounds where it's legal to be, and these would be much, much more cost-effective than, say, the incredibly overpriced River Street shelter, which initially had 14 beds for several years and cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I think that the city council can address these issues if it has the will. Unfortunately, in spite of all the blather about the wonderful social services and the best in town, the best in the country, the reality is there is the worst sleeping ban in Santa Cruz here in town, and they're trying to pass the worst laws as far as regulation of conduct down on the mall goes. And all this because of a frightened, paranoid feeling about business.
Okay. If I could quickly respond to the caller's question, I just would say that the problem seriously in the long term has to do with the provision of housing. The federal government has abandoned funding for housing, and the city council certainly has been lobbying them to do otherwise, but at the state level and particularly at the federal level. And in the meantime, I think local communities do have to try and provide services for people, but I don't think it's realistic to think that somehow the problem's going to go away by just allowing people to be homeless and legalizing it.
There goes Mike Rotkin's voice finally.
Well, it's not so much legalizing it. It's you don't arrest someone if there is no place for them to sleep. You don't want them to sleep, obviously, in the downtown area in front of your business in the middle of the street. That's always been something I criticized Mike for misrepresenting this issue. The issue is not sleeping everywhere, but having some legal place to sleep, of which I'm sure he will agree, for the overwhelming majority of people in Santa Cruz, there is none. And that's the bottom line on this issue.
No, I don't agree with that at all.
Okay, well, let's move on anyhow to the topic that we have been promising ever since the promo was produced, and that is
the recently announced proposal to require permits for panhandling. Where did this come from?
Well, as I said at the beginning, just to be...
Thanks for calling, John, by the way.
Just to, as I said at the beginning, the issue for us is not, this is not really a question of homelessness. It's not the central question as I understand it. What's the problem has to do with certain kinds of behavior going on Pacific Avenue in our downtown in Santa Cruz. I think that the major people that the ordinances that we're talking about, that we're considering next Tuesday night are... directed against people who are aggressively panhandling people, who are blocking the sidewalk, being involved in various kinds of activities that are make it really impossible for the average citizen in Santa Cruz to enjoy our downtown. Some of the people that will be affected by this are homeless, but it by no means is some kind of a subterfuge or some indirect way to try and punish homeless people or drive them away or anything like it, as I'm sure Robert will be suggesting to us, in fact already has earlier in the program. It basically, I think the majority of people who are causing these problems tend to be young people who actually live in a house in Santa Cruz. Some of them may be homeless young people who have had fights with their parents and no longer live at home or live at home on and off or whatever. But it really is only tangentially related to the question of homelessness. It has to do with public behavior in a public space. And I just very quickly, and Barbara will have plenty of chance to respond to this, let me give you examples of things that came up at our last public hearing about a hospitality program. These are things that people said they thought were reasonable things for people to do downtown. The city of Santa Cruz was fascist if we tried to stop them from doing them. And I'll just quickly run through a couple of examples. Someone said, why can't I ride my bicycle on the sidewalk? It's fascist to stop me. Somebody else said, look, this woman was singing at the top of her lungs. That's their description. At the top of her lungs at 12 o'clock midnight. She was right outside of a residential hotel. It's her freedom of speech to sing if she wants to. Another person got up and said, you know, there was a drumming circle. It was really beautiful. There was about 25 or 35 of us in a big circle. We pounded on drums for 2.5 hours. It was so spiritual. It was so wonderful. It's behavior that's simply unacceptable in a public space. There's no longer a consensus about how we ought to behave in public. People don't agree on those kinds of questions. In my last example, a woman got up and said, I don't know what this stuff is about aggressive panhandling. I've lived here 20 years. I've never seen anybody aggressively panhandle. Now, it's true, people do get nose to nose and demand money from people, but that's just human communication. And so my argument is that, you know, people are involved in kinds of behavior downtown in public that they seem to think, apparently in a quite self-righteous way, is totally reasonable and should be allowed to go on. And the citizens of Santa Cruz, I think, do not believe it's appropriate behavior. The city council, which represents them, doesn't believe it's appropriate behavior. And we're going to try and regulate it. So we have a series of ordinances that we're considering. They may be passed, I doubt that they all will be passed exactly as they are proposed to us. But they include such things as, and this will take 30 seconds, aggressive laws against aggressively soliciting people, getting too close to them when you ask for the money, doing things if they say no, using nasty language or threatening them if they don't give you the money. A second ordinance has to do with blocking the sidewalk, in other words, actually establishing some kind of a cardboard village or anything else on the sidewalk where people would make it impossible for other people to walk by you. There also are ordinance that would limit the size and location of various kinds of tables, displays, etc. Have people sign up for, as I was doing last week, get people to sign up for single-payer system, or you want to advocate for the homeless and argue that they should have more rights than the city wants to give them, or better programs, or be allowed to do certain kinds of things, that you'll be limited in terms of how big your display can be and where it can sit. You also, if you're begging for money, you'll be limited about exactly where you can stand and do that, or where you're not going to be able to stand on a bench to do it. You're going to be limited from various places. It ends up getting quite complex and will seem to people on the surface of it, you know, why are they getting into all these details? How come this thing is so elaborate? Because those are the only kinds of laws that can actually pass a constitutional muster. You have to be very specific about what it is that you're prohibiting. Because if you just say, be nice, don't be aggressive, don't treat other people with respect, it's not constitutional, because then people will claim that you're not going to enforce it fairly against everybody. That's what we're involved in.
That's a mouthful, Mike. I'm cutting off right now because I'd like to respond to that, and I'd like to hear what else you have to say, because I think we can deal with this point by point.
Don't forget the callers, Jeff.
Callers. Oh, yeah, callers. Okay, well, real quickly, I don't know how quickly. The Mike, as usual, gives you examples which any reasonable person would believe are incredible and based on, you know, are something that's worth prohibiting.
These are examples that people got up and gave us,
yes,
self-righteously, that should be allowed,
yes, Mike,
at our last public hearing.
But these are not what I am defending. What I'm looking at the clear wording of this proposed law. And the places of panhandling that are prohibited are at any bus stop, in any public transportation vehicle or facility, in any vehicle on the street, on private property without the permission of the owner, within 10 feet of the entrance of any building, within 50 feet of the entrance of any bank, in the parking lot of any bank or savings and loan, within 50 feet. We're not talking about standing on a bench. We're talking about most every place on the mall.
Robert, please tell us, really, we'll get right to the heart of this. Tell us which of these things, you just read a list, which of them do you think is unreasonable?
Well, let me finish.
I'm
going to respond to your whole thing, and then I'd be happy to go to tell you. We have to actually chart out the mall and find out how much space is left to legally stand on. Within 6 feet of the face of any building, which is next to a fence, while seated or leaning on any public bench, planter, monument, or other public property. So if you're sitting down on a planter and you ask someone for spare change, that is criminal behavior. You can be arrested for that behavior. Similarly, any time after dark, it is now illegal to ask for money. Mike hasn't told you these things because these are preposterous things, but these are things the city council is considering. Now, he's quite right. I do think these are designed to drive homeless and countercultural people out of town. And I think the word countercultural is important here because countercultural people aren't necessarily people who are a burden on society or run around collecting checks. These are people with a different kind of lifestyle. Indeed, some of them are Grateful Dead people. They follow the concerts. You always had a counterculture in this country, and some of the council members who were elected with the votes of these people who later got houses themselves or rooms and established residence have forgotten their origins. In fact, getting into city council seems to be, you have to abandon your principles to do that, at least insofar as basic civil liberties go. We can look at the example of Scott Kennedy, who previously supported the civil liberties of people, for instance, at the town clock several years ago, and now has actually got together with Chief Bassett to bring us this latest horror show of laws. Blocking the sidewalk, there are already laws concerning blocking the sidewalk.
It's Neil Coonerty who's introducing these ordinances, not Scott Kennedy, so let's at least get the facts.
Kennedy's picture was on the front page with Bassett, and I guess that's a Sentinel concur, and I can agree.
Oh, that has been known to happen.
Indeed.
Yes.
Blocking the sidewalk is already a crime, and in fact, blocking the sidewalk is a notorious ordinance currently used by police to harass protesters, and that is what this ordinance is also aimed at. Protesters. The city council has collapsed under merchant pressure and wants to rid the city of homeless protesters as quickly as possible. Rather than deal with the concerns they raise, like the fact that the city is illegally enforcing a law that in Santa Ana, and this is the issue that I mentioned earlier in the show, in Santa Ana, the 4th District Court has ruled the sleeping ban in Santa Ana unconstitutional. The sleeping ban in Santa Ana is even milder than the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. That Fourth Circuit decision is precedent statewide at the current time. It is a published decision, yet police continue to enforce this law. I see Mr. Rutkin is shaking his head. I can have the attorney who did the case bring this information to his attention. It is, in fact, the truth, as far as I know. And the city council is directing its police to enforce this kind of law. Now, we're not really talking about the sleeping ban, but blocking the sidewalk. A woman was jailed for 3 days last week for sitting off to the side on the sidewalk downtown. And as you know, the sidewalks downtown have been vastly increased in their expanse thanks to the new beautification program from Vision Santa Cruz, from which homeless people were excluded, incidentally, I believe.
So the sidewalks were made bigger, and that was an attempt to try and, like, exclude homeless
people? The sidewalks
people?
Were made bigger, not at all. And even though the sidewalks were bigger, someone sitting next to the fence was put in jail for 3 days because she was part of a protest vigil, which the city council and the chief of police wanted removed from the downtown area. A protest vigil that was not blocking the sidewalk. But there is currently a law already dealing with blocking the sidewalk. This law, as proposed, does not talk about blocking the sidewalk. It criminalizes being present on the sidewalk in a sitting position or a lying position. Now, nobody has any problems about arresting people who are deliberately obstructing traffic. I mean, that is just like nobody has any problem with the panhandler from hell stereotype that Mike is going to have you use as the basis for passing all these laws. I mean, somebody is harassing you. It is not merely your right. I would say it is your responsibility, so this character does not harass another person, to complain about it. You know, and you can complain about it by dealing with it yourself, and if you don't feel able to deal with it yourself, you can have authorities. And there are plenty of wannabe cops now on the mall, thanks to the new so-called misnamed hospitality program, which was passed 2 weeks ago, which has put little brown shirts on the mall who can walk up and down and help the tourists.
First, again, the program's not in effect. It won't happen until probably June or July. It's going to include a lot of senior citizens and other people in the community who are going to be out there providing hospitality for citizens and tourists, telling them where they can shop. They also will report to the police behavior they think that's antisocial. To call them brown shirts is the kind of like ridiculous exaggeration that I'm talking about. I am not interested in brown shirts. I'm not interested in having paramilitary forces repressing people, but I know what's going on. You say they're down there? The city
They're not down there yet. The city has appropriated money, as I understand, or passed the basic basis for appropriation.
The city allowed the merchants to tax themselves, actually the property owners.
That's part of the bill. The other part is $20,000
from the city. And then use some small amount of money for the redevelopment
agency.
Small
amount, $20,000 is a small amount.
Which they then will use to hire people to make them all a more friendly and attractive place for people to
go. Well, you better put a smile on your face and not sit down on the mall. That's all I can say, because if you do, under these new laws, if they pass, and I hope that Mike stops misrepresenting them and changes them, you're going to have the traditional Santa Cruz, as has already been seen by the downtown mall's transformation into Carmel North, with these straight avenues and the Christmas trees, is going to be
Mike Rotkin, you say this public hearing is going to take place before the city council this Tuesday evening?
Yes, fairly shortly after 7:30. I can't guarantee
Will that be at the council chambers, or
yes,
does this qualify as something that should be at the Civic Auditorium for one of those great circus shows?
I believe a group has already booked the Civic, and so we're going to be forced to try and make it work inside the council chambers.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if KSCO listeners might be interested in hearing that live on the radio
instead of taped on.
Well, let's see if we can dredge up some sponsors here for that.
Anyway, let me just say quickly about the Santa Ana issue. It doesn't apply, as far as we understand it, the courts will, of course, determine that finally. Not some friend, attorney, a friend of Robert's will not tell us whether it's going to apply to us or not.
Decision.
The Santa Ana decision, if you look at read it, which I've done, the judges make very clear that what they're saying is the city of Santa Ana was in fact trying to drive people out of town using ordinances, not providing any social services or housing services for the homeless, and they passed a number of ordinances that were basically intended to drive people out of town, and they make clear that that's why they find the law unconstitutional. The city of Santa Cruz, which provides, as I've already outlined, a great deal of services for homeless people, is probably not subject to that decision.
Mike, accurate on the statement. The Santa Ana decision does speak of homeless facilities in Santa Ana, and they are inadequate, just as in Santa Cruz they are inadequate. And if you consider that the city is still under this emergency shelter situation, where everybody apparently but Mike agrees that there is a shelter crisis, where there is an inadequate place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to be, these ordinances that were overruled in Santa Ana did not prohibit sleeping.
Robert, let's agree on this.
Now let me finish.
Let's agree. You're not going to get your voice,
Mike,
telling us how we should interpret the law is not going to be effective.
We have a copy.
One at a time.
It's not going to work. Our attorney tells us it doesn't affect us, so we're not going to carry it out. So you can go to Santa Ana and see them carry out their law. You're not going to, by getting on the radio or coming to the city council, you must do X or Y. It's not going to happen. So, it's not working. You're going to have to find another avenue to make us do something.
We're talking to the public. That's my avenue. Your attorney has also tried to criminalize the serving of free food in Santa Cruz. What we're trying to show you is that the attorneys connected with this is actually all these laws are an attorney's daydream. This is going to result in costly lawsuits up and down the mall against the city of Santa Cruz. And the attorney
in an attorney's dream, not daydream.
Quite right, yes.
Yeah.
An attorney's dream. Right now it's a daydream. Unfortunately, soon it'll become a nightmare, because that's what's coming down the pike. And the city council is lined up behind this like dominoes. I mean, even talking to the most conservative, the most liberal member of the city council, Catherine Byers, she sees little way to stop these laws because the merchants, as usual, have a done deal with the city council. Progressives have abandoned their progressivism, and I hope the students up at UCSC note this at the next election.
That's a great segue into a promo for tomorrow's program called In the Frying Pan, right here on KSCO between 9 and 10. Do I understand that you, Mike Rotkin, are going to be a guest on that program?
Yes.
Okay. So it was.
This is tomorrow evening, Sunday
producer
evening.
Producer typed it on the screen
this
earlier.
This is a show where you have two, I believe, former, I'm not sure, UCSC
correct,
students
correct.
Who, from the left and the right, who debate a number of issues, and they're going to try and, I guess, tear me in two pieces or something. It should be fun.
Yeah.
Why would they want to do that, Mike?
That's tomorrow night, right here on your news talk station for the Monterey Bay AM 1080 KSCO, 9 to 11 p.m.
Can I say something about the soup permit, since Robert's talked about that a bit? I will keep this very brief. I just want to say, City of Santa Cruz funds food programs for homeless people. We're not against feeding people. We do require that people that serve food in public get a permit to do it. And it may be in San Francisco, Robert was describing this, I don't know, that there people have willingly applied for permits and gotten the permits and simply are being arrested for serving food despite their attempts to go through the legal process. In the city of Santa Cruz, the Food Not Bombs group has never applied for a permit, has never attempted to get a permit. We would be happy to give them a permit if they applied for it, and they would be able to serve food here. The problem is they serve food here not very often, actually, just once in a while, once a week, generally, sometimes twice
basically
a week.
Five times
and,
a week, actually.
So in serving the food, the issue here has to do with public health and enforcing the laws that require people that serve food to strangers in public to get a permit to do it. And I have nothing against people serving food. As I say, the city of Santa Cruz funds programs that feed homeless people. We're against people serving food without getting a permit to make sure that it's sanitary. That's the beginning and the end of that discussion.
It's interesting that Mike has it says exactly the same thing that the mayor of San Francisco says, the man who's behind the Matrix program with the 7,000 plus arrests of homeless people and the 600 plus arrests of food.
I can't say what his motivations are. Let's talk
about being interrupted over here again, and I'm talking about Santa Cruz. I think the same thing is happening down here, as happened back in 1988 when people began feeding at the town clock in protest against violence against homeless people downtown, and the city's refusal to consider any change in its, as I said, worst in the state sleeping ban. As a result, Mayor Wormhout, concerned about the downtown business, as current Mayor Kennedy is concerned about the downtown business, actually the prejudices of the downtown business people, since, as I said before, business is not down this season. It is up, according to the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Robert, business is up because we're recovering from an earthquake. It goes up every year. This is not an indication that things are going great. We're still hurting economically in Santa Cruz.
Of course,
that's a ridiculous observation.
No. In terms, I think there was a dip last year rather than a rise, but this year there was a rise. But getting back to the situation at the town clock, the whole purpose of the city's power structure, if you can call it that, the city attorney, the police chief, the mayor, the city council, was to eliminate this group of protesters. This is the rationale behind the current bunch of laws that we're talking about. It's not because of any real pressing social problems. It is because the city has decided to listen to the siren song of the merchants about these tables that they don't like downtown. There was a one-week vigil which tried to bring to city attention the fact that the city is in violation of the law as propounded by the 4th District Court of Appeals in terms of its overthrow of sleeping bans statewide. City doesn't want to recognize this, doesn't want to acknowledge it, wants to lie about it, wants to ignore it. That's fine. But people who are living outside should know that this is currently the law. It is currently the reality. And that's the reason why you hear all this talk about permits. You know, Food Not Bombs and SWAP, its predecessor, Soup Without a Permit, did apply for permits, and they were jacked right and left around, and then they were arrested. And the reality, the fact that the city funds food programs is because SWAP got out there at the town clock.
Hardly.
And because
we funded it before
Sandra,
SWAP got out there, we funded
Sandra
during,
Loringer,
we funded
Sandra Loringer was convicted by a jury in Santa Cruz of feeding the homeless free food in a scandalous prosecution in the summer of 1989 that made headlines as far away as Bombay, that the city finally decided it did not want to deal with the situation further, and they set up their own program, which in fact was one of the demands that we had, one of the concerns we had, which was feeding people. Now, Food Not Bombs actually gives out better food than the River Street Shelter program. It's not the River Street Shelter, it's the free meal program. Not that there shouldn't be more programs and not that it's a contest, but the fact of the matter is this is a political decision. This is
Robert,
a political
yeah,
situation.
You've got the wrong co-guest here to make the argument that we're trying to stop protests. I've probably spent more time in jail than you have protesting illegal things.
In the old days.
Fairly recently went to jail.
I'd like to see you protest homeless rights here in Santa Cruz.
Well, obviously
I don't think that's going to happen.
Have you been in jail since you've been a councilman, Mike?
I was actually in jail during the period when I was off the council between 1988 when
but
I was...
But nowadays, Mike jails people, for instance, for bringing up matters at city council.
Robert, responding, Robert. Come on. Let's try and keep it civil here.
Well, it is civil. But it's not civil when you threaten to have me
turn off somebody's microphone.
No.
Well, then let me finish my comment.
Finish your comment.
My comment is that that, you know, the city of Santa Cruz, we are not interested in stopping people's expressing their free speech rights.
Certainly not.
I don't have a concern about, you know, I don't represent, the business class would find it amusing to think that somehow I represent them. Trust me, they don't quite see it
that
way.
I don't trust you.
And the situation is, we are trying to regulate behavior downtown, not because the merchants are breaking our arms or threatening us or because they elected us or because I care ultimately about how they will vote in the next election. They are not my constituents. My constituents, most of whom are very, very progressive, I'm an open socialist, most of my constituents are concerned about the kind of behavior they see going on in a public space downtown. It's one thing to say there's a protest downtown where somebody is, people imagine people standing there with a picket sign, somebody sitting behind a table, somebody leafleting someone, when in fact what you have is a cardboard village across the middle of a pub.
One
cardboard box across the middle of a sidewalk is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. You need to get...
Your mic is off.
You need to try and... understand that what we're dealing with is what not merchants, but the average citizen in Santa Cruz, including very progressive constituents that elected me and the 6 out of the 7 members of the city council that described themselves as progressive, think that the behavior down there has gotten out of hand. And it's not because people are protesting. It's the form that their protest takes that's being objected to. If they want to sit at a table, they want to leaflet people, they want to stand somewhere, fine. But to say, well, we're going to sleep on the sidewalks, which you yourself admit is not a particularly great place for someone to sleep, and then say, well, yes, but this is a protest, and that's why we should be allowed to sleep on the sidewalk, which you yourself say is not a particularly inviting place for people to be sleeping. That is a problem, because, in fact, what you have is not a protest, not a free speech effort, but, in fact, a violation of the law, and we're going to stop that kind of behavior and find a legal way to do it that doesn't, in fact, stop people from protesting, which we want to have happen in the city of Santa Cruz. We are not interested in limiting people's right to free speech, and you've just got the wrong person to think that somehow that's my goal here.
And do you expect something to be passed on this coming Tuesday?
I'm sure some things will be passed on Tuesday. As I said, I'm not sure that everything that's put before us by Mr. Coonerty is going to be passed in exactly the form that it's put before us. Robert started to read a list of all the places that people, you know, are not allowed to stand or whatever when they ask people for spare change and so forth. I think that I agree with him that list is somewhat broader than it needs to be. Many of the things on the list I think are totally reasonable. I don't think people should be extorted for cash when they leave a cash machine downtown or when they leave a bank. So the 50 feet away from a bank is a very reasonable regulation. He read that one. There's regulations about the door, how close to a doorway you can try and grab people, you know, and ask them for spare change. Some of the regulations are seem to me quite reasonable. Some of them need some change. Because someone proposes something at a public meeting for the council doesn't mean we're going to pass it exactly as it is. I believe there is sentiment on the council to try and pass some ordinances that will effectively stop aggressive panhandling. Whether, you know, which of these will pass and how they'll be passed, I think is a question you'll have to tune in to KSCO on Tuesday night to find out, or come down to the hearing.
Yeah.
Or read about it in the paper in 5 days.
Okay, we're not certain we're going to broadcast. We'll see. We'll see if that can be arranged. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special. My name is Michael Z. With me in the studio are Robert Norris, a homeless advocate and Santa Cruz City Council person, Michael Rotkin. We have a full phone board of callers. If you are on hold now, please stay there. I promise you that we will get to you and give you your chance to say your piece. We do have a number of other items to get to, including a program note here for tomorrow's program, Radioactive. This Sunday, Radioactive, Doug Silvera will be discussing...
He's always disgusting. What's he going to discuss?
Excuse me.
What a Freudian slip. Unbelievable.
We'll be discussing the proposal to allow illegal aliens to vote in Watsonville's school board elections and immigration issues in general. Scheduled guest on Radioactive tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on AM 1080 are Assemblyman Dick Montjoy, Republican from Monrovia, who has forwarded most of the immigration reforms currently before the state legislature, and Frechos Humanos, which is the Watsonville Human Rights Committee. Mr. Bardacki, who is very much pro-illegal alien vote, expresses his viewpoint most eloquently and should present a formidable challenge to the Assemblyman as well as the listening audience. Once again, that's tomorrow on the Radioactive Hour right here on AM 1080 KSCO at 10 a.m. You know Frank Bardacki, Mike Rotkin?
Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah,
he was very active in the free speech movement in Berkeley in 1964, and he's been active since then in a number of committees. He teaches at Watsonville Adult School, I think, where most of his most of the students are Latinos, and he's quite familiar with politics in the Watsonville area, very active down there.
Yeah, there's a documentary that was produced called Berkeley in the 60s, in which Frank Bardicke is shown as a demonstrating youngster and the old man that he is today. No, I'm only kidding, Frank. I guess he's middle-aged, we should say. So Frank will be here in the studio along with Assemblyman Dick Montjoy. So that's that program note. It's 21 before noontime here on hour number two of the KSCO Saturday Special. Monterey Bay, please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, howdy there.
Lawyers on the Line promo. You said it should be called Lawyers on the Take. That wasn't very nice.
That's what this new council laws are going to allow. Lots of lawyers on the take. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just briefly respond to what Mike
after
said?
After I remind everybody that this is the KSCO Saturday Special with MZ as the host, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Robert Norris, homeless advocate, and City Councilman Mike Rotkin right here on our stage here on KSCO on Corcoran Lagoon. And we've got a telephone full board of phone calls, and we've got about 16 minutes in which to get to all of them. So go ahead, take your 30 seconds that I promised you because your mic was turned
censorship.
Off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, people concerned about this issue and who want to fight these laws or have some input into that should contact 425-3345. That's the number to call to help out. I also just wanted to note that you notice Mike uses rather colorful language, extorted, grab people. We're talking about people asking for change. That's what's going to be criminalized, asking for change.
Actually, the law explicitly allows people to ask for change so long as they don't do it in an aggressive manner.
With signs.
Okay, back to the phone lines we go. Now to line six, Linda in Santa Cruz. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Linda.
I've enjoyed waiting. This is the best talk radio I've heard in Santa Cruz for years and years and years.
Linda, get to your point. We're late.
I have several. I'm sorry. As I've listened, I've heard a lot of misinformation or things that aren't quite accurate, so I'm going to rattle it off fast.
Great. Thanks.
I heard Robert say the city council has collapsed under pressure of the merchants, and it seems my impression, obviously that's subjective for anyone, is that the city council, the merchants, the homeless themselves, and a lot of other people are collapsing, and a big part of it is economic. But as I listen to you guys, another big part of it is remembering that we're talking about each other as human beings and living beings. And it's more than a legal problem. It's more than what we call a social problem. But we should be talking at least equal public policy while you guys are talking about the particulars of what's wrong. And here's some of the things I heard that are real different in real life. Mike, you said that the current policy you believe is to not enforce the tickets like panhandling and stuff, and I need you and the community to know that that's not my observation at all.
No, I
see
it.
Let me finish this sentence. I have observed over and over this obvious and blatant pattern of discrimination about how the police handle who gets ticketed, especially regarding panhandling or what might be seen as panhandling, whether it is or not, and drunkenness. You know, you get treated real differently if you look like you got nylons on and credit cards than you do if you're sitting down on a sidewalk and you look like you haven't had a bath for a few days. I don't think we should have taxis for the rich and jail for the poor. It's just discriminating. So we need to work on the rest of that picture. Also, I disagree, Robert, when you say you both said that panhandling and jobs weren't really the same issue, but they are. And I'm glad, I think, a guy named John called, because I have tried for 15 years to get people to see that if you look at this in human terms and one-on-one, there's lots of jobs. You know, the hostess program, or whatever you're going to call it this week, those could be particularly tailored to be friendly and accessible to homeless people to apply for. They could be proud of our mall and help people find their way around if it was really what it's supposed to be. Also, when the River Street Shelter first got founded, thanks to the beautiful leadership of Jane Weed, who was one of the people then on the council, it was a window of opportunity for the homeless to help plant trees, because the permits involved in all of this newness required something to filter between the traffic and the community, and that was the first of the services provided there. And that just got bulldozed over because it's not convenient. You know, and I'm not just talking about contractors. I'm talking about your own city attorney and everybody involved. And then again, I heard last week the same thing. These opportunities are just ignored because of think what you said about farm employers, Mike, it doesn't look like it's a money-making thing, so we'll just plow the people under. Who cares? Right now, in the new day center, I'd like to know its real name on the air, but whatever its proper name is, there's a plumber there that said the city of Santa Cruz is paying him something like $32 an hour, and now he's being told he has to dig a ditch while there's these five or six guys wishing they had a job standing there who aren't allowed to do anything on the site. And he said he'd be glad to give half of his money to get a pair of hands helping him do the work that he wasn't hired to do. If that's not a job and a training opportunity, then we have to try a lot harder.
Linda, I'm going to have to step in now and keep the pace up here, okay, because we've got about 13 minutes left and we have five other people that I promised we would get to. But thanks very much for your comments and thanks very much for waiting.
I'm concerned about words like extortion, you know. Does that apply only when you're near the bank? That's almost what it sounded like.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see if there's time to comment on
trouble in the world. another day.
Smile again.